Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, The Universal Blueprint for Building a Healthy Family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you've joined us today. I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop. And my topic today is helping kids live with ADHD. So if you have a child with attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, then you know how frustrating it can be for both you and your child to manage some of the symptoms. I've invited a special guest expert to join me today to give you some practical tips you can use to help your child develop the skills they need to overcome many of those symptoms and lead a fulfilling, productive life. Before I introduce him, I want to give you some resources to follow along with. They are at www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's parentstooltalk.com/LINKS. The resource that you'll want to get is a free report on ADHD and ADD, which is an excerpt from my book, The Parents Tool Shop. This report is going to give you information on what ADD and ADHD are, how you can tell if your child has ADHD and common misdiagnoses, who can diagnose ADHD and what needs to be considered when making that diagnosis, and what treatment options are available. So for those of you who are listening to a recording of the show or the podcast, if that handout is no longer at the links page, you can still download this report by going to parentstoolshop.com/ADHD, all capital letters. Again, that's www.parentstoolshop.com/ADHD, all in capital letters. I designed that report to offer guidelines to parents who are wondering if their child might have ADD or ADHD. Today's topic actually builds on that information. Today, our show is for parents whose children have already been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, and we will only spend a really brief bit of time at the top of the interview with just some basics, but my main goal really is to go through the three main categories of symptoms and to have my guest expert give you practical advice for things you can say and do to help your child manage those symptoms. So go get the handouts, and I'm going to tell everybody how to participate in today's show. The links, again, are parentstooltalk.com/links, and that you can get it there during the month of December 2010, or you can go to parentstoolshop.com/ADHD, and that's all caps, after December 2010. So let me tell you how you can participate in our show today. First of all, I want to remind foster parents that you can get continuing education credits if you will check in at the beginning and the end of the show. You can call in or use the chat room. And if you also go to that links page, parentstooltalk.com/links, and you click on the link that says CEUs for foster parents, just follow those instructions and you can get credit for attending, for listening to the show today live. Also, everyone who is listening live today is welcome to ask questions. We'll be fielding those after our first break, which is about 20 minutes after the hour and throughout the rest of the show. If you want to call in with a question, call 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. When you connect, press the 1 key on your phone pad, and that has you raise your hand so I know that you've got a question. You can also send me your questions via the online chat room by typing in your question there. Just go to parentstooltalk.com and click the play/chat button right underneath today's show title and description, and that'll bring you into the chat room, which I'm going to be keeping an eye on throughout the show. And so without any further delay, let me introduce my special guest expert for today's show. David Zadar has worked in child welfare since 1982. He started his career in the Cleveland, Ohio area, where he worked for 16 years in residential settings for severely troubled children. He was vice president of residential services for the largest provider of residential care in the state of Kentucky. Currently, he works throughout the country as an independent trainer and therapist. David has a Bachelor of Social Work degree from Capital University in Columbus and a Master's degree from Case Western Reserve in Cleveland. He also has certification in juvenile sex offender treatment from the University of Louisville. David and his wife Joan live on 7 acres on the Ohio-Pennsylvania border with their 7 children. You can learn more about David Zadar by visiting his website, www.davezadar.com, and that's DaveZidar.com. And we'll give you that website several more times throughout our show today. A personal comment is that I met Dave when I took his workshop on ADHD for continuing education credits for my own social work license. And a lot of what he taught I already knew from my own research and from writing the book, but what I really loved and was so different and so valuable, I thought, was the practical suggestions that he had for managing the problematic symptoms that these children display. He went right through the DSM-4 criteria that's in my book, and actually came up with suggestions that he offered for almost every single one of those. So that's why I had asked Dave if he would come and share with other parents today on this radio show. So, Dave, thanks you so much for being on the show today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Good. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy training schedule and family schedule to be with us today. Before we dive into that diagnostic criteria and your suggestions for each of those, can you kind of just give us a short, plain and simple language definition of what ADHD is and if anything is known about what causes it?
Well, it's actually, when we're looking at ADHD, we have to look at, there's 3 diagnostic subtypes. And so that's an important distinction to make. There's attention deficit disorder, inattentive type. So there may not be as much hyperactivity present with that, but there's still going to be the flight of ideas and distractibility. There's ADD combined type, where kids have both the hyperactivity and the distractibility. And so we have to kind of take a look at where our kiddos are at. Kids neurologically with ADD, the research is saying now that their brains actually fire slower. And so what that does is that makes stimulant medication actually make the brain kind of re-equilibrate so that they're able to cull out that extemporaneous stimuli that's so distracting for our kids. And so when we're looking at ADD, we have to look at it both on the biopsychosocial level. So we have to look at the biology, of course. And that's where our docs come into play in some cases. But we have to look at the social levels as well. And so a lot of the things that I tend to key in on more is the here and now. What do we do to get Johnny to sit at his desk and to attend and to focus? So ADD is kind of a combination of behaviors that kids will struggle with, mostly in the areas of inattentiveness.
Okay, and I find it really fascinating that new research is showing more that their brains are firing slower, because I think most of us tend to think, based on the particularly when we see hyperactivity, that maybe their brains are operating too fast. So that's really fascinating new information, isn't it?
Well, in the 70s, everybody, we thought that stimulant medication, 70s, early 80s, we thought the stimulant medication had what was called a paradoxical effect.
Yeah.
In that we would give kids stimulant medications that would calm them down. And in actuality, what it does is it helps the brain to, the theory is, it helps the brain to actually to fire more rapidly. Therefore, they're able to kind of screen out the extemporaneous stimuli. We've known about this for a while, but we're really starting to look at the downside of stimulant medication is that it does have a lot of side effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think both of us agree that, and we're really not even going to kind of have the whole big controversial discussion, you know, that I'm sure you've engaged in and that typically when you're on a radio show, probably they want to engage you in about,
right,
you know,
right,
how overdiagnosed it is and how misdiagnosed it is and how other medical problems can mimic it. And
right,
that was kind of the information that I wanted to put in my book to really help parents be informed consumers. Because as
right,
a parent educator, what I was hearing as parents were coming in was, my daycare worker says my three-year-old must have ADHD. You know, I'm thinking, first of all, can't be diagnosed at three. This is a school teacher. They don't have the ability to do that. I've seen things like food allergies, all those kinds of things. So I'm just going to refer people to that report since we're making it available to kind of cover that piece of it, because I think we could easily spend a whole hour on that, and I know you have a lot to say about that, but
right,
I'm all about practical tips. And so we're really going to zoom in on that today, so the parents who would listen to this will really have something they can go home with and start using right away if they have a child who has any of these three areas of symptoms. So,
right. What we want to tackle is the here and now. Is,
yes,
is the what can we do with our kids? More social interventions with kids.
Yes.
More
and what parents can do.
Exactly.
Yeah, particularly what the parents can do, which is always my primary focus. So we're
right,
going to cover the three main categories that you mentioned. You mentioned the inattention, the hyperactivity, and the impulsiveness. So
right,
since we've got three segments, we'll just go through those. So I'll just kind of read off what some of the symptoms are, and then you can offer some suggestions for parents. I'll just kind of read what's in that DSM-4 criteria that we both have listed in our handouts. For the inattention, it includes problems such as failing to give close attention to details or making careless mistakes, having trouble staying focused during activities or play or during tasks, doesn't listen when spoken to directly, doesn't follow through on instructions, organizational problems, avoids or is reluctant to engage in tasks that require high concentration, loses things, is easily distracted, and often forgets daily activities. So what are some suggestions that you have for parents for helping children develop a better ability to pay attention?
With inattentiveness, let's talk about inattentiveness first. Often fails to give attention to details. One of the things that I found with my ADD kiddos is checklists. Is make sure that they get into the habit early on to write things down. Part of the issue with ADD is short-term memory may not be the greatest. And so one of the things we want to do is we want to encourage kids to develop an organization that works for them. And I found that working with my ADD kids, one of the things that they really benefit from is kind of a to-do list that I prefer not to get lost. And so I'm doing a lot of work with kids on having a to-do list and keeping a backup to-do list, because they often can lose things. So having a to-do list, and even for little kids who can't read yet, you can make a picture board for them so that they know their routine and they know what's expected of them. A neat little intervention for kids about cleaning rooms. You tell your child, go clean your room, and he goes upstairs and maybe he puts a pair of socks away, and that's it, and he says, I'm done. One of the neat little ways to do that is that you stand in your doorway and you take a picture with your digital camera of the room as it should be. So go up there with your kid and clean the room the way it should be. This is a real nice joining technique as well, so that you can kind of show the kid to get the room and how it looks like. Then you take a picture of the room and you post it right there on the door and you say, now Travis or Johnny or Bobby or whatever the child's name is, when the room looks like the picture on the door, that's when it's done. And so that will help them with kind of that detail of being able to see an actual finished product. Another thing that we like to do is we like to break things into smaller pieces. You know, think about whenever you're lost, back before we had GPSs, and you'd pull into the BP station, and after that third turn, you had to say, oh, could you give me a piece of paper? I need to write this down.
Yeah.
And so breaking things down into, I like sets of three. So, for
example,
if you tell a child to set the table, give the directive in three steps. Put the silverware on the table, put the napkins on the table, and then come back to me. You make sure that the child's got those three things done. You give the next three directives. And what that is that's an opportunity to praise a child to say, okay, you did a great job. Now this is the next step. Now this is the next step. Now this is the next step. And what that does is that gives a kid a chance to kind of break things down into small, manageable pieces. Sometimes I think they tend to look too globally, and the job is just so overwhelming that they just kind of give up. So if you can break it down into those three little steps, that'll be really helpful. In regards to has difficulty sustaining attention, you really want to structure their day so that they have that difficult task, those multiplication problems, but then they have something to look forward to. Difficult task, positive task. Difficult task, positive task. And when you structure a kid's day out like that, he's always got something to look forward to. If you just say, you know, you've got to do these multiplication problems, you know, and if you don't do them, he has to realize, do your multiplication tables, then you get to go outside and play. You know, do this, and then you get to go outside to play. And if the multiplication table problems are even too overwhelming, you could do it in thirds or even in quarters. You know, okay, you do the first 25 multiplication tables, then you can go out and play, then come in and do the next 25 and go out and play and do the next 25 and so on. So breaking things into those smaller pieces are going to be really helpful, and kind of getting kids to kind of look at, you know, just that small piece that needs to get done.
That sounds excellent. And then that's not too many things for them to remember. And then if you're writing it down in some kind of a checklist or something that they can remember by, then they can go back to that and remember maybe what those steps were.
Right, right. And the nice thing is, even with calendars, you know, people live and die by their calendars. Imagine losing your calendar. I mean, you'd be lost. It's
right.
The same thing with the kid and the checklist. One of the things that I do with my kids, especially when they're doing, you know, schools tend to do that too. They're doing a lot of passports and sending notes back and forth. What I like to do with kids with families that have computers is many of the printers also are photocopiers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kid will make his list, and then we just shoot it through the photocopier real quick so that we have a backup copy. A lot of adults who have ADD actually put their list on the Internet. So that
mm-hmm.
if they do lose their list, they can just access it through the Internet. And you can do
great
that through
idea.
There's a zillion programs where you can park stuff up on the cloud.
Yeah.
So that's something that our adults who struggle with ADD have found very helpful. And the calendar, too, is very helpful because the calendar also can show kids, yeah, you've got a math test on Friday, but Saturday you get to go roller skating with your friends.
Yeah.
And so the calendar can help kids to kind of anticipate longer term things.
And these are really great suggestions for all kids. I mean, all kids need to learn how to be more organized. But especially children who are going to have difficulty with inattention or forgetting things, it's going to be even more important. And without getting into the whole controversy of behavior charts, I just kind of want to – the way that I teach behavior charts is that we don't – it's not that you get paid for doing something that goes up on a chart. What you're describing is exactly how I encourage parents to use charts, which is more of a reminder list or a to-do list or something that they're learning maybe how to do several sequences of a task, and so they can kind of check off the sequences as they go to do it. And there's a lot of intrinsic value and benefit when children feel good about the fact that they were able to remember it on their own, they were able to complete the task. So there, when you're talking about these calendars and lists, I can see a lot of parents feeling like they have to tie some kind of reward to it. And I guess in my opinion, and I know we discussed this when I was in your workshop, that there's not always a need to attach some tangible reward to this. It's a skill that they need to develop, and they are going to be feeling really good about developing that skill and having successes in being able to remember things and follow through on their tasks.
That's a huge point, because I think, you know, no adult gets a star chart now.
Right.
And I think a lot of times, you know, I wish we did. A lot of times I think our kiddos have to realize that there's going to need to be some intrinsic, you know, self-directed behaviors. And when we use those prompts and those charts, whatever you want to call it, that reinforcement isn't necessarily hung upon that. That it's actually just a basic expectation. It would be analogous to a child who is required to walk on crutches. or a child who's in a wheelchair.
Right.
We don't reinforce them for using those modes of transportation. This child has these checklists and these picture boards as a mode of navigating his life.
Yeah.
And that can really help him to realize that he is just as capable as his non-ADD peers. He just has to process his life a little different than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, it might take a little bit more effort. Yeah, it might take a little bit more effort and might take a little bit more time to develop a habit, but perfectly capable of being able to do that with some conscious effort. And you had mentioned offering praise before, and I'll just, for those who are tool shop, our language is that how praise is different from encouragement, and I know we also discussed this. I don't worry, folks, I thoroughly, like, vetted Dave when I was at his workshop. We had some really great discussions. But the difference between saying, oh, you make me happy when you did that, or good job, you know, kind of that more external pleasing others, as opposed to, wow, I bet it feels really good that you were able to clean up your whole room and you remembered every step, or wow, wasn't it nice to remember your homework today? Isn't it a good thing you decided to write a reminder note to yourself?
Right.
You know, something that kind of focuses more on the internal and acknowledging their development of skill as opposed to, oh, you're doing what pleases me, or you're doing something that I wanted you to do.
Right. And again, also giving the kid choices. You know, he chooses to do this. The reinforcers are he's going to excel in whatever activity he's engaging in. And sometimes these reinforcers have to come from within. These reinforcers have to come from within. They have to be self-directed because there's not always going to be around someone that says, what you did made me happy.
That's right. Eventually it has to be internalized. Yeah,
yes.
For it to continue. Good, good. Well, I noticed that we are about 21 after the hour or so. So actually, I'm going to give you a chance to catch your breath there, maybe get a drink of water, and I'm going to let people know how they can call in and talk about some resources. So just give me a minute or two here, Dave, and then we'll come back, and we will cover the next section of symptoms, which will be hyperactivity. So for those of you who may be just joining us, you are with Parents Tool Talk, and I am your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop. And today we're talking with guest expert David Zadar on the subject of helping kids live with ADHD. We're going to be opening up the conversation to questions. So if you do have a question for David Zadar or me, just call 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654, and hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand. You can also send a question using the chat room at parentstooltalk.com. I am in the chat room today keeping an eye on things, so if you do have a question, just go to parentstooltalk.com, click on the play/chat button, and you can join us in the chat room and type up your question, and I will pass it along to David. So while you are formulating your questions, let me tell you about our featured resource this month. If you are a regular listener to Parents Tool Talk, you know that every month we feature a different resource from the Parents Tool Shop Library. And during the live show only, and for a half hour after, we offer a special double discount on that resource exclusively to our live radio listening audience. So this month we are featuring the Parents Tool Shop Teleseminar Series, which takes the proven effective universal blueprint for parenting success formula, and it applies it to the most common challenges that parents face. Each teleseminar was recorded live with a group of parents and family educators and covers topics of interest to every parent, the most common challenges parents face, such as bedtime hassles, morning delays, lying, sibling conflict, temper tantrums, and that's just a few. Each teleseminar has a remastered audio, a full transcript, and all the resources that we made available to the original teleseminar participants. Now, the teleseminars are available for download or on CD. You can get them individually or in a specially priced collection, which is 12 hand-picked teleseminars and a bonus interview with me and Alexis Neely on the subject of kids and money. And that particular interview is not available anywhere else other than that particular teleseminar album. Now, all month, we've been offering 25% off of this resource for the month of December. But for you, our live radio show listeners, you can get this resource for double off or 50% off for the remainder of this show and for about 30 minutes afterwards. All you need to do is go to parentstooltalk.com/links, click the link for the Parents Tool Shop Teleseminar Series, and once you put it into your shopping cart, you're going to use a special coupon code PTT202. That's PTT like Parents Tool Talk 202. And remember that that is active during the show and up to 30 minutes afterwards. I am not seeing any questions right now. We do have some listeners and some people in the chat room, but I'm not seeing any questions. So I think we must be answering, giving lots of great information and are covering all of our bases. So folks, feel free to call in or chat as we continue with the interview. Let me get back with David. All right, so let's move into that second area of ADHD symptoms, which is hyperactivity. And as you mentioned, there are some attention deficit disorder may be present without the hyperactivity component. So that's often when we see the ADHD, the difference, and that's kind of the difference is whether or not that hyperactivity component is in there. According to the diagnostic criteria, some of the behaviors that are listed the parents might see are fidgeting or squirming, leaving one's seat in class or other situations where staying seated is expected, running around or climbing excessively at inappropriate times, difficulty being quiet during play or leisure activities, always, quote, on the go, and excessive talking. So, David, give parents some suggestions. If they have a child who, first of all, maybe address the difference between how do you know if your kid is just a high-energy kid versus hyperactive, and then maybe you can move us into some practical suggestions.
Well, I think, you know, it is how debilitating is it? Are we getting notes from the teacher saying that, you know, the child is inordinately active? We have to remember that especially younger kids have a higher level of energy than most. So what I like to do is just look at it. Are we seeing it in both school and home, or are we just seeing it at school where he's expected to sit still? Are we dealing with a maturity issue, or are we dealing with an ability to kind of delay gratification with a kid, or are we dealing with, you know, a child who truly does have the hyperactivity component? So look at it in all environments. Does the child is the child able to sit still for certain classes but not others? So look at the child globally. One of the things that we have to look at, especially with the hyperactivity, is when he's working at school, can he attend when he is in the right condition? Meaning, is the environment conducive to learning, or is it overstimulating? I think if a classroom has just too much visual stimuli going on, sometimes toning down the classroom a little bit can be helpful for our kids. I think best practice is the Connor scale, which is a scale that the teacher fills out and the parent fills out, and then you take it to your professional, and he kind of judges based upon the Connor scale. Are we seeing this behavior in both domains, mm-hmm. in the school and the home? So that's kind of best practice would be to base it on the Connor scale. And also, you know, is he getting up in and out of his seat, but his grades are straight A's? You know, maybe mm-hmm. the child isn't being challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may be something that you would want to look at as well.
Is there an age that particularly, you know, young boys, and I don't mean to stereotype, but I would, generally speaking, we probably would see it more often in boys, of just kind of being real high-energy kids, is there a certain age that if someone's saying, oh, they're hyper, it really, age is still a major factor, and like maybe under 6 or something along those lines? Is there anything around age that...
Yeah, most kids are diagnosed with ADD, ADHD between the ages of 6 and 11. And
okay.
And the one causal factor that we know is that school is starting. And
mm-hmm.
so now they're expected to go from the playroom to the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so that 6 to 11 time is pretty important. Now, I know guys who have been diagnosed with ADD at 50. So it's one of those things that you know, when you start looking at those numbers, but that 6 to 11 age, what we used to call the latency period, is the time that is probably most telling of whether we're going to be dealing with ADHD or just somebody who is a boy. The ratio is about 4 to 1. For every 4 boys, you're going to have one girl with ADHD.
Okay.
However, the caveat with that is they may not have the hyperactivity, so they may have the inattentive type.
Right.
And so many, many times our little girls are being misdiagnosed because they don't have the hyperactivity. So they're quiet in the classroom, but they're not getting anything.
Right, because the inattentiveness.
Right.
Yeah, they're not processing the information.
Right, totally.
Yeah. And I just thought of this question, and I don't think it applies just to the hyperactivity, and it may be a can of worms, but we can keep it from opening up all the way. But I wonder, the other thing about if children have not been in a preschool setting, or if that preschool setting is mostly play, maybe just a couple hours a day, what do you think that there is a factor involved in a family dynamic of being more permissive parenting, a more flexible, chaotic, unstructured kind of family setting that could result in children having a difficult time paying attention, sitting still, running around, doing whatever they feel like doing, being impulsive, that's not necessarily this brain wiring or chemical issue. It's really more a matter of they've never been in a structured setting or been asked or encouraged to develop those skills.
Right, yeah. A lot of this is based upon socialization. And if you come from a very chaotic family environment, if a child has suffered trauma, be it foster care, physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, a lot of these things can be misdiagnosed as ADHD. Structure is not a dirty word. And little guys, again, my pre-readers, that picture board, that sequencing, that routine can be very helpful for our little kids. Other things that we can do with our little kids, sitting and reading a book to a child, with a child, helps them to develop that attending, for lack of a better metaphor, that attending muscle. It strengthens that attending muscle. Kids who are read to do much better in school. The family meal, where it's structured, where a conversation is taking place, and where kids have to wait their turn, is huge for when they hit school. I always encourage parents when they have a little kid who's starting kindergarten to at home practice raising your hand. You know, say to a kid, okay, we're going to play school now. Now you have to raise your hand. If you have a question, you have to raise your hand. And then that's a real opportunity to praise a child and say, good job, you did great with that. Boy, you're going to get ready for school. You've got it going on. And just praise a kid with that will be one of those things that can really get a kid ready for school. The social aspect, kindergarten is ostensibly working with that kind of pre-reading skill, but a lot of kindergarten is just getting kids to work collaboratively and cooperatively.
Yeah, and getting used to structure and how schools operate, but not expecting them to necessarily do it for a full day, since a lot of places are still on half day kindergarten. But yeah, first grade can then be a real challenging year because then they are expected to sit still pretty much all day.
Yes.
So that's probably so I had wondered. Thank you because I had wondered, you know, how much family dynamics has to do with it. And this kind of actually goes back to my handout, which we can refer people to, which is before people jump right into, you know, slapping the diagnosis on there and giving a kid some medication, of looking at all the other things that are going on and taking a look at that family environment is a really key thing to look at. Because if that hasn't been addressed, even if a child does get a diagnosis and is on medication, if those parents aren't working with the child on developing these skills and all of that, then it's not going to have the same benefit. The medication isn't a cure. It just helps slow things down so that or am I saying that backwards? Does it slow it down?
No.
I got the whole brain going slower thing in my mind.
There isn't a pill for every
problem. So they can concentrate more on learning.
Yeah. There isn't a pill for every problem. And I think that's the thing, is if we can get kids into environments that are encouraging, that are full of rich experiences, that can do that. If you have a relationship with your kid, if you have your child's heart, they are going to flourish a lot better than if you are just constantly, you know, putting him in timeout. I'd like to talk about timeout for a minute, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because I think that, especially with our kiddos with ADHD, we simply put a kid in timeout and we say, okay, now sit there.
Yeah.
And be good. And then we act surprised when he's got his feet up on the wall, or he's wiping boogers on his brother, or he's making, you know, inappropriate noises or things like that. The rule that we all were taught was 1 minute for every year's age. With a child with ADD, I like to take that rule away. And what I like to say is, when we put a kid in timeout, as I air quote, is when we put a kid in timeout, is instead of saying, okay, 1 minute for every year's age, we say when the child is sitting there compliantly, that's when timeout ends.
Yeah.
Because timeout speaks to one very specific thing. We always say timeout, timeout. We never say what the full name for timeout is. The full name for timeout is contingent timeout from positive reinforcement. The assumption is that time in is reinforcing. Well, if I'm an ADD kid and I'm sitting in catechism class and I don't want to be in catechism class, I simply have to act out. Then I put in timeout and I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So that's why kids' behavior is so good when you take them to Kings Island, you know, because they're there and you go, okay, Travis, you go to timeout. He'll sit there like a soldier for his whole time because that's a very reinforcing environment.
And the other piece – I'm sorry, finish.
The other thing is sometimes having to stay in the environment is a better behavior modifier than actually having to leave the environment.
Yeah. And the other piece that I cover with that, and I'll actually, since we brought that up, I'll just mention to people, if you go to the Parents Tool Shop website, there is a free article on how to do effective timeouts. And part of it is what David has just been talking about here, in terms of, you know, when they're calm, then that's when it's over. But the other piece has to do with when it's used, because first of all, it's overused and used more as a discipline tool as opposed to a calming down tool. There's a lot of really good discipline tools. But timeouts usually, when they're used in the most effective way, are from when children have kind of lost control of their behavior, or they're really angry, they're having a meltdown, and it helps give them time to calm down. And when we combine what I teach in the Keep Your Cool tool set, which is about the different types of anger energy, children who have who tend to be on the more hyperactive side or high energy side, they have a tendency to they get very overwhelmed by those emotions and that energy that comes from being angry or frustrated. And when we ask them to sit still, that energy just kind of builds. And so a lot of times they could end up staying in timeout for a really long time because we're not giving them an outlet for that. So providing options for what children can do to channel that energy, if they are at home, something like being allowed to run around the yard and get that angry out and then come in and sit down because we need to talk about what happened. Or if they're in school, of even having, I know a lot of school classrooms are being structured, so there's kind of a little corner area, and back in that little corner area, it's a quiet area. There might be some art activities, and so there might be some squishy balls, some things that kids can do that can help channel that energy and get it out of their system so that they can then come back and be more calm and participating in the class or in the family. And dealing with whatever it is that happened before that, if a discipline is needed. So the timeout is really the calming down period that happens before we sit down and say, okay, we've got a problem here, and then we move kind of into the discipline piece.
And I like the fact, I like the C word. I like to say choices a lot.
Yeah.
I like to put behavior where it belongs. Was that a good choice? Was that a bad choice? And put some of the responsibility, put the responsibility back on to the kid, because, you know, good choice, bad choice, they're constantly doing this cost-benefit analysis. Is my getting up out of my seat worth not being able to spend 20 minutes at recess? Is my not waiting my turn worth giving the answer?
Yeah.
I think that that's a, you know, we have to realize that sometimes they're going to make that choice, and we're just simply going to have to say, well, this was a poor choice, and here's why.
Yeah, and in terms of using the language of choices to deliver or reveal discipline is another piece that there's free articles on my website, and the teleseminar on discipline that's available to folks covers not only how to recognize when it's discipline versus punishment and actually over the line to abuse, but then how to structure discipline in a constructive way and how to deliver it with language of choice, which is just exactly what you're talking about. And then, of course, there's a section in there on timeout. So I'll toss that in there as an additional resource people might want to check out. So we are actually at 40 after the hour. Are there any final comments that you want to make about hyperactivity?
Not right
before
now.
We take a break. Okay. All right, and you can think about that when we come back. All right, it's 40 after the hour, and I do see some folks in the chat room and calling in. So if anybody does have a question, I'll give you a chance to get your hand up or to type that in now. We are going to be moving into our final segment here real soon. If you have just joined us, this is Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jody Johnston-Powell of the Parents Tool Shop, and today we're talking with David Zadar on the subject of helping kids live with ADHD. If you do have questions, just call in 347-205-9654 and hit the 1 on your phone keypad to raise your hand and let us know you've got a question. Or you can go to the chat room at parentstooltalk.com, click on the play/chat button, and that'll take you into the chat room, and you can type a question in there, and I will read that off to David for him to be able to answer. If you would like to get to access even more bonus resources, and if you, we encourage you to sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. Some of the bonus resources range from articles that were written by our guest experts and myself to book excerpts, bonus handouts, exclusive post-show recordings. For example, as we get into the interview, for example, today, we happen to bring up timeouts and discipline. So I'll be asking my producer, Chris Gooley, to be adding that for the post-show resources that everyone on that list, you don't have to go out to the website and search for that article. We'll give you a link to that, and any other resources that we mentioned or that seem to be relevant to the topic, we'll send out to you in an email after the show, usually within 24 hours, and everything will be right there, directions for downloading the interview, listening to it later, all of that will be on there, as well as some special discounts and bonuses. So let's see, I am not seeing any questions right now, so I think we're covering some really good content here, David. So let's go back, and we'll have until about 3 minutes before the top of the hour. Let's go into our third area of ADD, ADHD symptoms, which is impulsivity. And these symptoms include blurting out answers before questions are fully asked, having trouble waiting their turn, frequently interrupting or intruding, such as butting in on conversations or games. So tell parents, David, how they can help improve their child's impulsivity.
One of the things I like to do with my ADD kids is I like to have them think, then do. And there's a couple different ways to do that. One of the ways is that we will have kids play a game, a board game, but they have to count to 5 before they decide to make a move, shoots and ladders or something like that. And what that does is that starts to have kids practice thinking things through. I also like to reframe things because I think a lot of times our ADD kids, they're being told that they're bad or they're dumb, and so this impulsivity really really serves a function in kind of before we were living in cities. This impulsivity and this hyperactivity, if you look back 100 years when we lived on farms and we were more rural. You know, if you had hyperactivity, you were one of the best workers on the farm. If you had impulsivity, you were one of the best hunters on the farm. Well, these skills, now that we live in cities, are a detriment to them. And so one of the things we want to do is we want to help our kids to control their impulses. Think, then do, or stop, then think. And we say to kids, was that a good choice? Was that a bad choice? Especially for our kids when it's something tempting like food or things like that, is can you delay doing something or acting on something until you've thought it through. I will tell kids to count to 10. I will tell kids to step outside, take four deep breaths before you have to make a decision. The problem is that they shoot before they actually think.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can set the stage for them to make good choices, these board games things, what it does is it helps them to slow down a little bit, to tack down. Practicing raising hands. The problem is that they get impatient with people. And they, you'll see someone trying to make a decision. If you've ever played cards with an ADD kid, playing 500 Rummy, and someone's trying to make a decision and they're thinking for an extended period of time, you'll see this ADD kid just ready to just jump out of his skin. And what we have to do is we have to help them to kind of slow things down and think things through. So helping them to process is going to be important. That kind of that think then do walk is really, really good. The other thing is we want to frame impulsivity. Sometimes impulsivity is something that is just framed wrong. Someone who makes a quick decision may not necessarily be making a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that he has to think things through. There's a book called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell that talks about sometimes we think things through to our detriment. Now, what we want to do is we want to have kids slow things down. And so the counting, the breathing, sometimes I'll have kids take a piece of paper and weigh out their options. What are the good things? What are the bad things? Helping them to develop kind of an internal decision tree that helps them to think things out. If I cuss the teacher out, I may feel good for a second, but I'm not going to feel good when I'm sitting in detention for a week.
Mm-hmm.
So have him think these things out.
The process that I call facts listening, which is focus on feelings, ask, and this is what the parent does to help the child learn how to solve their own problems, is focus on feelings, ask the child helpful questions that get them to think through different things, and then examine possible options, which is that basic problem-solving process of brainstorm ideas, then evaluate the ideas, then choose an idea, as opposed to just doing the first idea that pops into their heads. So when parents use that process in listening to their children and helping their children learn how to make decisions for themselves, it kind of guides them through that process. And then once they've done it with their children a few times, hopefully then children will know the process and can start using it on their own.
Yeah, and the other thing is don't run in and rescue them right away.
Let them
make a decision, look at the consequences. I think what happens is it's almost like working a puppet. The puppet is fine when you got your hands on it. When you take your hands off, nothing happens. So let the kid kind of think things through. Okay, well, what if you did this, what would happen? If you did this, what would happen?
Mm-hmm.
The minute you just give the answer to the kid doesn't have to think things through.
And they're not learning to flex that muscle. They're not learning how to develop that muscle of thinking things through.
Exactly. Then they turn 18 and we send them to university.
Yeah.
And what happens is there's no longer mom or dad standing over them going, well, is that a good choice? Is it a bad choice? And they just lose it. And we see this in universities all the time. I mean, look at universities that have dropout rates of 60-70% their first year. It's because they get in, they get a little bit of freedom. It's better to give these kids some choices early on and build that muscle up. So when they're 18, they can be self-directed instead of us standing over them. Kids, when you work with developmentally handicapped kids, there's something called prompt dependence, which is kids will not move until they're given a directive. That's to the detriment of the child.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is we want to get these kids to be self-directed. That's why the to-do list is so helpful. That's why the what are your choices is so helpful. But doing it when they're little, doing it in such a way that there's a safety net. So that when they're 18, they're – go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. It's important to be doing this when children are little. The kinds of decisions that they're making when they're young are not huge life-impacting decisions. And we can allow them to make an imperfect decision and experience the consequence of that and then say, so what did you learn from that? And so what were some of your other options? What might you do next time? So that they can have experience making, I don't want to say necessarily benign, but they're not going to have the same impact as, you know, helicopter parents that, you know, are constantly hovering and telling kids what to do, and kids are just following orders the whole time, and then they get to college and they don't know how to make a decision.
Yeah, and again, it, with little kids, it's something as simple as what do you want to wear? It's
as
what do you want for lunch? What do you want, you know, and then also asking their opinion on things. Why do you think she said that on TV? Why do you think they did that on TV? I have a six-year-old, and she's like talking politics to me because I'm always—it's kind of amusing. But I'm always asking her, "Why do you think so and so did this? Why do you think so and so did that?" And that leads to another thing with our kids in regards to social skills. Our ADD kids really struggle with in social situations. So asking, "Why do you think so and so did this?" or "Do you think that's a good choice?" or that helps kids to kind of start processing those social situations as well.
Yes. And not, and it also saves them from having to make all the mistakes themselves. You know, when we can look at someone else's decisions and use that as an opportunity to process. You know, I wonder what other options they had. So what happened when they decided to do that? What else could they maybe have done? What do you think might have happened if they had done that? So that they're getting that opportunity to be paying attention to what's going on in the world and using that for their own development to be able to make decisions. And like you had mentioned choices, you brought up choices again, that, you know, it's not everything has to be a choice and not everything has unlimited choices. You know, parents still have the right and responsibility to set some boundaries, you know, so that whatever the choice is, it's going to be safe or it's going to be healthy. But within those boundaries of allowing children to make choices, and that helps give them that opportunity to weigh the pros and cons or, well, don't worry, you decided that this time you'll have another chance to make a decision next time. You know, this time you picked milk, next time you can pick juice. You know, it's not – choices become something that they get very skilled at doing, and it's just a natural part of going through their day rather than it being something really overwhelming and then they just do the first thing that comes to mind.
Right, and they shoot before they think. And the other thing is, you know, I don't want to come across like you know, I don't want kids to be told what to do. I mean, clearly there needs to be structure, and accountability, accountability.
Mm-hmm.
But when we say accountability, it goes two ways.
Both
positive accountability. You know, I said to my daughter today, you know, you go out and shovel the driveway, you know, you're going to earn X. That's accountability. It's accountability in the positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's accountability in the negative. You chose to not do Y, so this is what's going to happen. And our kids will do that. That's different than if you're good, I'll give you a cookie. That's a bribe.
Right.
I like kids to earn things, and I think earning is so important, especially with our ADD kids, because what you'll find is they go, oh, okay, I work really hard and I get this cool thing. So if I do more of this good thing, I get more of this good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our best workers are ADD.
And I'm sure you would agree, though, that there are some things that kids don't earn money for. I mean, setting the table, being part of the family. There's some things they do just because they're part of the family. And then there's other things they can do to earn money. And then that gives them opportunity to save, to set priorities. And that's really kind of the gist of that money and kids interview that I happened to mention a little bit earlier that's part of that teleseminar is how to handle allowances so that it doesn't become that, oh, you want me to help you fold towels? Well, how much are you going to pay me for it?
Right.
You know,
well,
everything doesn't turn into a negotiation.
Yeah. My rule is if you slide my feet under your table, I have the privilege of saying, you know what, the garden needs to be hoed. Go out and hoe the garden. What do I get paid? Did you eat dinner today? Yeah, okay, go hold the garden, you know.
Yeah.
One of those things.
There are some things we do.
Yeah.
Like
your example of folding laundry. Well, you know, we all fold laundry. You know, we all do dishes. We all do those basic things. What we do in our house is pay jobs, which is something different. It's above and beyond just basic living. My children don't earn an allowance.
Mine never did either.
Jobs. Yeah, I'm not a just because you live here, I give you $10. I'm not buying that. I'm not a big fan of that. And I think getting back to our ADD kids, it's getting them earning which is a real alternative to a lot of other behaviors, too. For example, if a kid steals, the alternative to stealing is what? Earning.
Yeah.
Well, so that's why I think it's so important that we focus these kids on, you know, earning is the way to getting the things you want, not being slick and being manipulative, lying, things like that. And I think our ADD kids really, really struggle with just the fact that they want things, but they can't delay the gratification.
Yeah.
And that's what earning does. It helps them to delay gratification.
Yeah. You know, what's been really fascinating about our whole conversation, David, is, and I don't know that you've read my book, but so many of the things that you have brought up are in the book. They're in, and my book is The Universal Skills All Parents Need to Have. And one of the most common questions I get is, well, my kid is a special needs child because they have blank, fill in the blank with whatever the diagnosis is. So will these skills work for my kid? And my answer to that is, these are skills that every child needs, every family needs to use, every parent needs to use, every child needs to learn. Every child needs to learn how to make a decision. Every parent needs to learn how to listen well. All children need to learn how to make choices. You know, all these things we've been talking about. And so I, what I always tell folks is, when you use these skills regularly, you know, as soon as you learn them, hopefully at a young age, and you raise your children using all of the skills, not just picking and choosing here and there, children develop these skills. And so it can take care of a lot of the behaviors, the problem behaviors, that parents do have some control over by teaching children these skills. What's left is an indicator of where either the child is having difficulty learning it because of maybe some kind of a diagnosis, or it's not that they can't learn it, it's just that whatever this diagnosis is, it interferes with behavior and it makes it a little bit more difficult for them to learn it. Doesn't mean they can't. And it doesn't mean just because they have that diagnosis that you don't use all this stuff. So I'm really finding that you're really kind of validating the importance of universally effective parenting skills for all children, but really kind of emphasizing and highlighting just how important it is for parents to use these skills with children who have ADD and ADHD.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing is we don't want kids to hide behind their diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Because the child has ADD doesn't mean he doesn't need to learn his multiplication tables. It just means he's going to have to learn differently.
Yeah, use an excuse.
And yeah, there's a book called The Gift of ADD, and it's a nice, nice book. It talks about you know, that kids with ADD have a higher energy level. That some studies actually indicate that they have a higher IQ. That they're more skilled in empathy, that they're more skilled in some of these more intangible, measurable skills.
Mm-hmm.
So just because someone has ADD doesn't mean that they're not going to be held accountable, that they're not going to have expectations. It's just that we're going to have to train them up a little different, a little differently.
Yeah. Well, I'm so engrossed in our conversation. It's just 2 minutes to the top of the hour. I have a little recap I need to do. I'll pass back off to you one last time, David, if there's anything, think about any final comments you want to make until our outgoing music starts. Let me just recap real quick. Today, my guest was David Zadar. We've been talking about helping kids live with ADHD. And, David, this has been such a valuable conversation. I so appreciate you being here. Everyone, please remember to check out David's website. It is Dave Zadar.com. That's all one word, DaveZadar.com. Foster parents, remember to check out from the call today to get your continuing education hours. Just go to theparentstooltalk.com/links for directions on how to do that. Everybody, remember your double discount if you want to use that to get the teleseminar series. The code is PTT202, and it'll be active for about another half hour. And David, any final comments before the music starts?
Oh, I just wanted to thank you for having me today. I really enjoyed this. This time just flew by. It was a lot of fun. And just remember that, you know, our ADD kids, there's a lot of potential with these kids, and not to shorten their options. So, but thank you for having me.
Thank you, Dave. And I think everybody listening, you can tell why I invited Dave on the show. You've got tons of great ideas. I think our philosophies and practices match up really well. I really appreciate your expertise in this area. And everybody, I hope you will go check out David's website. If you ever see him doing a workshop, be sure to sign up for it. And everybody else, we will be seeing you, or I should say talking to you, next month. Thank you for joining us today. If you want to learn more about Parents Tool Shop, go to parentstoolshop.com. Check out some of the articles that we had mentioned on the show today and sign up for our mailing list so that you can be part of Parents Tool Talk in 2011. This is Jody Johnston-Powell, and I am always yours in service to families.